Hello, everyone. Thanks for joining us again for another edition of All Things Aviation and Aerospace. As you aspiring young aviation professionals, seasoned aviation veterans, community college and university professors, and parents all know, my bottom line goal with this webcast is to open your eyes to the wide variety of opportunities and possibilities in the aviation and aerospace industries. I've been flying since the early 1970s. Which also is about the time I started a career in radio and television broadcasting. And one of the things that has always stood out to me and fascinated me is the amount of entrepreneurial spirit in aviation and aerospace. And what has been happening as of late is innovative aviation research, development, and execution. In implementing new aviation and aerospace technology, all the things that you see happening with the space exploration and so many things that are happening in all aspects of business aviation, commercial aviation, et cetera. What I really enjoy about this is our upcoming generation are playing a major role, but so are our seasoned professionals. So it's a collaboration of sorts where there's innovation coming from kind of both sides of the spectrum. And I think that's very effective, very cool, but it also presents a lot of opportunities and possibilities. And that's really what we want to emphasize with that. So yes, I used the term really cool while telling on myself, I guess. Anyhow, let me move into what we're going to talk about for this show. And that's what's called, entrepreneurship. And we'll talk about the entrepreneurial spirit, which I think is something, again, that is just really interesting and fascinating. And I have two great guests. There are a lot of people for me to touch base with about this and see if they were available. But I was fortunate enough to get these two guests on, who both have really great stories to tell about what they've done in their aviation businesses, how they got started and things like that. And so I'm looking forward to us having that conversation and hopefully inspiring some of you that may be thinking down the line, well, after I finish my school and after I've worked in the industry for a bit, I'm going to start my own business. And that's something that sometimes you plan ahead and sometimes you don't, as I'm sure these gentlemen will attest to. Let me start out by introducing first Kay Gitovin. Kay is the co-founder and CEO of Go Rentals. What makes Go Rentals really unique is it's a niche car rental agency that only caters to the private air travel market and has grown exponentially from when it was the little car rental company that could to having over 100 locations now. Kay, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Vince. Thank you for inviting us. I'm honored to be here, and I want to thank you for putting this program together to inspire our young generation. So my hat's off to you.
Thank you. It's my pleasure. Also, I'd like to introduce Dan Drohan. Dan is the founder and CEO of Solaris Aviation. Solaris does a lot of different things in the aviation realm, primarily management of aircraft, providing charters, and I'm sure there are other services that they provide that Dan's going to look forward to telling us all about. And as I mentioned, he is the founder and CEO. And so looking forward to the conversation about his start in aviation and how it came to bring Solaris into the picture and what that all entails. Dan, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Vic.
It's great, you know.
And I'm representing the least well dressed contingent on this, and Kay is our example of how to show up for an interview. So,
well, you know, we stair stepped it. So Kay's like, bam, and then I'm kind of like, and then
used to being the bad example. So that's all right.
No, you know what though? The way you're dressed, Dan, represents what I want to have today, and that's a casual, easygoing conversation about being an entrepreneur in this industry and what you guys have accomplished and done. And I've known both of you for a long time. We've been in meetings together, Dan, the board meetings and all of that at MBAA. So we have a history with that too. but I've known you guys personally and professionally for a number of years. And I have to say, and I'm not sending anybody a check, I admire what both of you have accomplished and are currently doing in your specific aspects of the industry. So it's going to be fun for me to kind of showcase you guys a bit about what you've been doing as entrepreneurs. Without further ado, I'll get that started. And I'm going to start with you, Kay, because I used to fly into John Wayne Airport there in Southern Cal. And I saw this little car rental company back in the late 90s, early 2000s, actually late 90s, that, you know, was kind of unique, called Go Rentals, and had these really fancy little cars. And it was clear that it was specific for the FBO and for the private air traveler. And I thought, that's kind of cool. But like anything else, I thought it was cool. And then I went on about my business and continued my longtime relationship with some of the competitors in the general sense, you know, the Hertz and the Enterprises of the world, et cetera. But I was fascinated initially with seeing your company and to see the growth that it has achieved over the next couple of decades is extremely impressive. But I want to go back and I want to start with your background as to how you even became an entrepreneur. I mean, before we even get into the specifics of things, you know, how did, what, where was the seed planted that said, you know, one day I might own my own business and that type of thing. So how did that come about?
Thanks. And thank you, Vince. As you know, we started our company back in 1995, and it's been a great 25 years. It's going to be 26 years in November. And we saw the niche and the opportunity. And, you know, I was always an entrepreneur. When I was a kid, I always asked my grandpa to let me go sell his beauty product. He had an import and export. And as an immigrant to this company, I saw the opportunity that I can take advantage of all the opportunities out here and become successful and have a dream and follow my dreams. And my dreams was always aviation. I loved aviation, but I could not be a pilot. I was going to business school, and I saw the opportunity within aviation that we can speak the language of aviation and we can employ people in aviation and service people, pilots and passengers that fly to the FBOs.
Yeah.
So you know, going, when we started it.
Go ahead.
I
was just going to say, before you go too far into Go Rental, I wanted to go still stay back and talk to you a bit about your, the fact that you were wanting to sell, and selling is a big part of being an entrepreneur because you've got to generate revenue. So when you were working for your dad and working in his business and that type of thing, was it at that point that you knew that someday, not knowing exactly what it would be necessarily, that you wanted to have your own business?
Yes.
You talked to your dad about that?
Yes, when I was a child, I always wanted to own my own business, and I always looking at opportunity and learning from my father, from his friends, from my grandfather was in his own business. So I grew up in an environment that my family owned their own business, and I knew the hard work, I knew the long hours of putting in there, but I knew that by creating your own business, you can provide for people, families that are going to be joining your business. You know, I watched my grandpa and my dad, how many families they supported by hiring people within that industry. It was always fascinating to me that, you know, getting involved in your own business and trying to develop something out of an idea. And, you know, for me, I was lucky that idea started working, but so many times you have to, you know, put time and effort and it may not work and you have to, you know, dress it up, change it. And, but you know, if you have a dream and you follow your dream, you can always get there. And that's what it happened to me. And as a child, when I was going door to door, trying to sell soaps and shampoos to pharmacies at the age of 12, 13, and I was getting, no, you're a kid. What are you doing here? And that motivated me to work harder and go after it harder. And when I got to my business again, I was started, me and my brother, we started a business, and I was the car washer. I was the customer service person. I was dealing with the pilot and passenger.
You were the jack manager. of all trades. Yeah. It sounds like you were very inspired by two generations. You said your grandfather and your father, and you just, sounds like you wanted to just follow in their footsteps and be a business owner, just like you had grown up in, basically. So I'm going to digress a little bit and ask you, while you were in this, because that's kind of a unique mindset, especially a young man that wants to go and sell his products for his dad door to door. Not everybody has that skill set or that comfort level. What was it like for you with your peers when you were in school and everything? I'm talking about grade school and high school, with this mentality of it had to set you apart from some of your peers.
Yeah, you know, you have that, you know, I think in life, everything that you do is selling. You're selling yourself, you're selling your knowledge, you're selling your personality. In any relationship, we are all salespeople throughout our life. And that my personality helped me to be the captain of my soccer team at the school. And having that selling personality, sell myself. I went to the Catholic school and I grew up with a lot of Italian fathers that they were our instructors, and I was standing out among them because I had that selling personality.
Okay.
And so that's start by selling yourself.
And so that made it for a natural transition. What encouraged you, or who encouraged you when you went to college to take business as your course? You took business and marketing.
Yes. I wanted to become a dentist, but I couldn't afford it. It was too expensive. So I changed to business and marketing.
You wanted to become a dentist?
Yeah, at one point I wanted to become a dentist, yeah. But then I changed and I got into business and marketing. I loved it. I enjoyed it. I from day one, I had ideas and how to make money from buying used cars while I was going to school and selling them. And by going to Mexico and buy Hirachi sandals and bring them to U.S. and sell them to Costco when I was going to school. So I was finding ideas how I can... I can use my selling skills and be able to pay for my college and find opportunities for my future. So wow. I tried many things, yes, throughout my college. Yeah.
No, keep going. I'm just amazed. I thought I knew a lot about you, but I didn't know this, and that's pretty interesting. But there is a common denominator from when you were a kid, and that was the selling and the marketing and products. And so that's always been, so I have a feeling if you went into dentistry, you probably would have ended up selling dental products.
Yeah. So, you know, I always, you know, I think in life, we have to find our niche and then also try to be different. And if I want to do what my competition doing and what everybody else doing, I'm going to be one of them. And that's why on a daily basis, I teach my staff, that my team members, that think differently, try to be unique. Let's offer something that nobody else can and offer. And when I was a kid, I always wanted to have that different ideas, that if I do something, I want it to be different so I can stand out. And I think with our young generation growing up and they want to get into business, they have to make sure they set themselves apart from the rest of the crowd.
Niche and passion, I think, yeah, absolutely. And while we're in the niche mode, before we talk a little bit further about Go Rental, I want to bring Dan into the conversation. Dan has a little different background, but I think there's some similarities too.
I have to admit, I was laughing as Kay was talking about, bringing sandals in from Mexico. It reminded me instantly of, I had an airline pilot friend when I was probably in grade school at this point. I was working out at the airport and he was bringing fake Rolex watches from Asia because he was an international airline captain. And I was selling these things at school.
Oh my God.
And it was one of a number of entrepreneurial ventures in my life, including, Lost Animals Incorporated, and where I was hired to go find lost animals. We actually never solved the case, but The selling of watches was a peak in my career when I got shut down by the school. They thought I was, you know, walking around opening up my jacket, you know, with the watches dangling.
How old? What grade were you in?
I think I was in 7th or 8th grade at that
point. Okay, so you were in middle school. So was that, were you into entrepreneurial type of stuff at that time, or was it even before
you
then?
Know, much like Kay, Vince, I was always the kid that was looking for the, and I would almost sort of casually say sort of the hustle, you know. I was always looking to make a buck washing a car or figure out how I could, you know, mow a lawn and, you know, and do it creatively and quickly to make it more efficient. And, you know, but aviation the whole time was in the background as a passion.
When did that kick in, the aviation aspect of it? Because we're similar in that we both started learning to fly we were teenagers.
There are childhood photos of me sitting, and I'm sure there are going to be people listening to this that will remember this, but Sporty's Pilot Shop did those cockpit posters.
Yep.
And they came out when I was probably, you know, 8, 9 years old. And I remember one Christmas, I got my first one, and it was, you know, a Cessna 172 or something. And I thought, you know, it was the space shuttle at the time.
Of course.
Over the next sort of, you know, birthday and next Christmas, I added to that collection. And at one point, you know, an entire wall of my bedroom was covered with these things, and I would change them out, you know, and be able to sit in front of them. And, you know, I mean, that, gosh, that I was, you know, 6, 7, 8 years old, like I said, when that was going on. So it was always in the back of my mind. And,
did anyone in your family fly, or was this just you?
No. And, you know, it's sort of part of my journey, Vince, was my father died when I was a kid. And, you know, I this is probably the wrong crowd to talk about this in front of, but I was never a very good student. And so I was always sort of distracted and in other ventures, whether it was sports or aviation or, you know, those side hustles, as we say now.
Did aviation become a focus for you that kind of brought it all together?
For sure. Right after my dad died, I was 12 years old, and a friend of the family got me a job at the local airport. And, you know, again, I had already had the sort of spurred interest at that point. And he took me up there on a, you know, a June morning right after I got out of, I want to say it was out of 6th grade. And, he sat me down on the bench and said, okay, figure it out. And I spent the entire day watching the world go by and all these airplanes taxiing back and forth and sitting on that bench. And he picked me up that afternoon and said, well, how did it go? And I said, well, good. I sat on the bench all day and watched the world go by. And he said, all right, we'll give it one more shot tomorrow. And, the next morning I showed up and I sat on the bench, and about 10 o'clock, a guy came by and said, listen, you're not planning on sitting on that bench all day again, are you? And I said, well, I don't have anything else to do. And he said, if you wash and wax my car, I'll take you for an airplane ride at the end of the day. And, I spent all day on this old BMW 2002, and there I'm dating myself now, but, he took me out at the end of that day for a ride in a Super Decathlon that I will never forget. And it set the tone, frankly, for most of my aviation endeavors. And
it lit the fire.
Yeah, totally. And I eventually, you know, I started work at the airport the next weekend and spent the next 6 or 8 years, you know, working out at the airport 7 days a week during the summer and on weekends during the school year. And sometimes
so you got totally absorbed into aviation at that point. By the way, I'll mention, I had a Marine One pilot that flies the president, or used to fly the president, who said he was a total screw up in school. But yet when he got focused on flying, he ended up finishing school properly and went on to college and finished that. Went into the service to fly helicopters in the Marines. And the next thing you know, he's flying the president one day. So, you know?
Yeah. Well, you know, Kay said he was supposed to be a dentist. And I left for college wanting to be an architect. I created a little sort of a bootleg charter company. I think the statute of limitations has run out on this, but my phone may have ring later today with the FAA. But I started a little, you know, another side hustle, of course, you know, flying kids around down at school. And I came home at Christmas and my mom said, why do you have all of your stuff with you? And I said, I'm not going back. And the launch of a very difficult Christmas break that ultimately led to the launching of my first business. So
Yeah. So, you know, from both of you, this is really great to hear your stories. And I appreciate both of you being very candid about your personal experiences growing up, because this current generation and the upcoming generation, this is the what they're going through at a different level. They have it's a different time, but they're going through the same thing. They're trying, I'm talking to you viewers, you're trying to figure out what you want to do, how you want to do it, what's going to work best. Everybody got thrown a wrench last year with the pandemic. I came across a number of students that were finishing up their professional pilot track with an aviation university like Embry-Riddle or UND or whatever the case, or Purdue, et cetera. And it came to a screeching halt because of the pandemic. And it's like, this program I was supposed to transition into with one of the major airlines that was going to eventually put me in the right seat of a shuttle aircraft is not happening. What do I do? Do I wait? Do I wait until I can start building my hours again? Or do I go back into school and get my master's, or, et cetera? Or do I even shift all the way and do something in aviation, but different than what I originally planned? So, and it's also great to hear both of you that it may not seem like a big deal, but trust me, having raised three daughters myself, for kids to hear that, you were going to be an architect and now you run this successful aviation company, and you were going to be a dentist and now you run the successful aviation company, it's really great for them to hear. So
yeah, and I think the message there, and Kay, I know you agree, is that things almost never turn out the way you planned or expected or imagined. And life has this way of handing curveballs and really soft, slow pitches that sometimes you can knock out of the park. And that's what sort of drives the excitement and the curiosity of the whole process for me anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. Kay, you probably can chime in on that, because you actually, after school, went into real estate, if I remember correctly, and did that for a while. Tell us about that and the transition to you and your brother coming up with this idea for Go Rentals.
Yes, after graduating, I started in real estate. And, because I believed in my selling technique, which my selling technique was building relationships and telling stories, and that helped me to become in my area to become a good salesperson. I got into real estate. My first year, I became a rookie of the year among 6,000 agents in the country. I sold more real estate, and
was that commercial real estate or residential?
I did residential. I did both. My first transaction was, I sold a church. I didn't know you can sell a church, but I sold a church. That's my very first transaction. Then the second one, I got lucky. I sold a train depot, a train station, and then I started selling homes. And
so, talk about variety.
I know. So then they saw my I'm selling very well. I was promoted to become the manager of our real estate company, overlooking 75 people. I was the youngest manager at the age of 22, become the real estate manager in the country. And then that was promoted to manage multiple offices, over 500 agents. And my offices in the country became, one of them was number one in the country, which to this day still exists in Orange County. And then during, I spent 3-4 years in real estate, and then my brother and I decided to follow our dreams in terms of owning our own business and get into aviation business. That it was our dream. And
why the car business in aviation though? Well, I'm sorry, but why the car business in aviation? What was the spark that said, you know what, let's start our own car rental company specific to private aviation?
So Dan can probably testify to that. When our clientele are top 1% that they fly to the field, time is of the essence. They arrive, they want to be treated the way they want to be treated. They want to be treated even the way they don't know they want to be treated. So it's they arrive, they want to get to the destination as fast as possible. They want to be greeted, they want to be recognized, they want somebody to speak the hospitality language with them. And we saw that this is not happening. One of the, when I was with the real estate company, we flew one time and we got to an FBO, and one of the car rental companies, it was six of us, we had a reservation for a Suburban, they brought a Ford Mustang. And oh, I was wow. the junior guy, I was trying to, I said, why did you bring me a Ford Mustang? We wanted a Suburban. He said, sir, it's a free upgrade. We won't charge you for it. I said, I don't need
they
the
They totally
Mustang.
Missed
said,
it.
It's a free upgrade.
Give the
it's six of us. How do we get into the Mustang? So, and then second time, the same thing. And we saw that there is an opportunity in that market. That
you saw a niche.
Then our guests coming.
Yeah. Okay, I have to tell you, that niche. I've been in this business a long time, as you know, and I've always sort of giggled to myself. You know, you'll see a Gulfstream or a Global or a big Falcon land somewhere. And you know that the principals largely getting out of the airplane are driving probably pretty nice cars at home. And then they swing by the 80,000 mile, domestic economy car for the guy to drive for the weekend. And I've always sort of scratched my head and, obviously Go Rentals filled that niche really well. But it's almost comical at times to see the marriage of, ultra high net worth principal and rental car discombobulation,
Yeah, absolutely. So
I remember the first luxury car that we bought, the FBO GM came to me and said, "Okay, nobody would rent a BMW 750. You just need to buy regular cars." I said the reason is because there was never an opportunity for them to rent. And he was shocked when our luxury cars start going out on rent, even though we have regular cars as well. But we saw that niche, as Dan said, a lot of our guests coming in, they want to drive the same car they drive at home, or they want to drive the car that they want to buy in the future. So they want to try those cars. And
absolutely.
We just had one of the original founders of Home Depot was here and became a Bentley convertible. And then yesterday he was flying out. He called me and said, "Kay, I hate you." I said, "Why?" He said, "Because now my wife loves this car, and I have to go buy her
a
convertible for my wife."
That's priceless. So you started the business, Kay, and with that, you saw that niche, you and your brother, and you got started. As you mentioned earlier, and this is another important point, and I'm sure Dan can chime in from his standpoint too. When you first started this business, you were the cook and bottle washer and everything. You were the, if it's a restaurant, you were the hostess, and then you had to be the server, and then you had to go back in the kitchen and cook, and then you had to clean up, and you had to get the table ready for the next guest. You did all of the above with your Go Rentals, right?
Exactly. When I was going through school before we start, I was a dishwasher at the restaurant, and one day the manager came and told me that you're spending so much time washing the forks and knives and you're spending so much time polishing it. Get to work. I said, "Sir, this is the image of your restaurant because they have to be perfect. When they arrive, the very first thing they see is the fork and knife." And then when I was leaving, he said, "You left a legacy as a dishwasher in our restaurant because now we make sure every fork and knife is polished." And I brought that same mentality to our business that I wanted to make sure that from day one, we started with seven cars and we had to borrow money to buy those seven cars, get a loan, and we started with seven cars. But I wanted to make sure those seven cars, every time our guests are getting to those seven cars, is cleaner than the car that they have at home, because they come with the Dan's planes, arrive at our FBOs, they come from a beautiful plane, they have to get into a beautiful, detailed, sanitized car. So I started sanitizing our car myself from 25 years ago because I didn't want anybody to catch a cold sitting in our cars. So paying attention to details has helped us. And to this day, when I go to our over 100 locations across the country, the very first thing I do, I go to our detailing center, I go to our cars, make sure every car is perfect, because that's what dance clients need and that's what our private aviation need, that from air to ground, everything needs to be perfect. And since I'm an aviation company, I know what our crew wants, what our passenger wants, and we have to make sure we speak the language and provide that.
Yeah, yes. Dan, I heard you wanted to
be the car washer. We have to be.
No, I'm smiling and nodding because Kay probably doesn't even know this, but I remember bringing clients down in those very early days of Go Rentals. into LA and watching, you know, all of that take place and seeing people's reaction to it. So I got to watch Kay's entrepreneurial life journey from the other side, you know, and seeing how it was impacting my customers and me, frankly, because I was a Go Rentals client early on myself. And so it's, you know, yeah, it's inspiring to hear how he was thinking about, you know, sort of how the sausage is made. And I think as people think about their careers, you know, again, as I said earlier, things don't ever work out like you think they're going to. That's sort of rule number one. And rule number two is it is always much more difficult and requires so much more passionate hard work than you think it's going to, and or that it looks like it did.
Yeah.
You know, so somebody might look at Go Rentals today and think it's just, you know, that somebody put, you know, a couple billion bucks on the table and said, build a rental car company. That is just not how these things work out. And I will tell you that if there is one hallmark of these things, and Kay is going to nod his head this time, you know, I don't think you can call yourself an entrepreneur until you've almost not made payroll. You know, in the early days of my first business, which led to Solaris later, you know, I mean, you had to be the chief cook and bottle washer. You had to fly the trips, and then you were spending your night times doing billing and planning maintenance events and working through HR matters. And then you were flying the next day. And while you were on the road, you were working on accounting and marketing, and you got to hustle. I mean, and I think ultimately, as people think about entrepreneurship, that's why you hear the word passion so much, because it is the one thing that transcends laziness or tiredness or unwillingness to continue or frustration or, you know, negative thoughts around process or success. Is that when something is driven from a gut level around passion, it usually can transcend all of those things.
Yeah. So tell us about your first business, Dan, and how that led to Solaris.
So my first, when I got back from my short stint at college, and again, Vince, I know you've got a lot of college kids on here. So me talking about dropping out of college is probably the last thing anybody wants to hear. But and I did try to go back several times, but would end up sitting in these classes so frustrated. And I actually found an old book from a college course, and it was just filled with notes around, you know, getting the business launched. And it was
Dan, it is very real. So I actually appreciate you being so candid about it, because it's a very real thing. And a lot of young people who are currently in college, you know, have that conversation with their self or with their family or whatever, trying to figure out, you know, do I need to really finish this? I think it explains why so many kids go through two or three majors. My kids went to a university that said they didn't have to declare until the end of their second year, which really caught us off guard. We're like, what?
They're
like,
well, no, I'll tell you,
it takes kids 2 years to figure out what they want to do.
Absolutely. And I, not to segue off of the Sunset and Solaris story, but I have three sons, and my oldest is now a 21-year-old freshman at the Citadel, having taken a couple years off to pursue a passion around firefighting. My middle one is in the middle of his gap year, getting all of his flying ratings. And I suspect we will do the same thing with our third if he wants to do it. I have said, though I am not a college graduate, that college is important if you think it's important. And it may not be for everyone's journey. And I will tell you that, you know, as I look around our executive team at Solaris, we've got MBAs, and we've got former military aviators. We've got a whole swath of different backgrounds and different people. And I think that's what makes the organization unique. But it looks so much like all the other ones in the industry. You know, it's people. And I don't mean to sort of use that buzzword or a cliche term, but you mix passion and people, or passion and good people who are motivated, and there's some pretty crazy things that can happen. And ultimately that was sort of our journey.
Absolutely. And I don't want to digress too far, because I still want to hear about your first business to Solaris, but you know, that brings back a conversation I had briefly with you about a young lady at the Pittsburgh Institute of Aeronautics on a 2-year program for maintenance, just graduated in August and was offered a job at SpaceX.
Yeah.
Who knew? Yeah. I mean, generally, most kids listening and watching this show, or most young people, I should say, they don't like us calling them kids, but they are to us, watching the show are probably thinking, oh, gosh, to work at SpaceX or Blue Origin or or Virgin Galactic or any of those, you have to have a degree in aerospace or aeronautical engineering or degrees of that type to get that position. This young lady is all into everything that has to do with being an AMP. And it turns out that even the SpaceX of the world need an AMP, you know, yeah, or need AMP. So it comes back to your point, Dan, not everybody is supposed to be go to a 4-year college.
Yeah, or, well, and I'll tell you, our work, obviously, we are very fortunate to work with some brilliant minds and people that have done amazing things, both in long careers and shorter careers than you would imagine to get where they are. But the one thing that I think sort of symbolically around what they would all say when asked, you know, what does it take to get from where they were to where they are? They're all going to say, a willingness to believe and understand that anything is possible. And I don't mean to sound sort of Pollyannish about that, and it's very easy to think that way. But I'll tell you, it really is true. You have to believe that anything is possible. And there is no one track. I think in the industry, on the aviation side, we have done a fairly poor job of addressing two groups of future candidates. One are transitioning military aviators. And the second, frankly, are fledgling pilots. We have these great university programs that get students up to a certain point, and then they go off into this abyss. Until they hit some hourly threshold that somebody arbitrarily decided on 25 or 30 years ago, that somehow, you know, 1500 or 2500 or whatever it was the magic number you had to have, when ultimately there's no science or data behind that that really backs that up.
No, I agree with that. And I think that I do know, at least on the commercial airline side, that there are three airlines in particular, Delta, yep, United, and Southwest, that get that. And they've all created programs to help try to transition, to try to fill that gap and create a transition that is more productive and more realistic for somebody that just got their 4-year degree and finish their professional pilot track and maybe has 800 hours or whatever the case, yep, but they're still short of what's needed to actually transition into the industry and get a job.
Those innovative programs couldn't be coming at a better time. And I think business aviation needs to catch up on that front. We're working on some things at Solaris in that regard. But we sort of hope that as an industry, we're going to start seeing improvement because, frankly, and I don't look at the airlines as competitors much, but we're getting our clock cleaned on the business aviation side when it comes to that, right?
Sure. Let's talk about your business and how it transitioned to Solaris, because I don't want to lose our time, I still have a couple of things we want to hear.
Yeah. I launched this thing as an air tour business in 1992 with a single Beach Baron that was the result of that tough Christmas break I had, where I convinced my mom to spend the rest of what college money had been left on an airplane. And so
you're convincing
about this sort of yeah so that was the ultimate of sales 101. The side hustle had worked, and bought an old Baron, and it was really it was a learning platform. I still have the airplane today, now 20 or 30 some odd years later.
That's awesome.
Ultimately started as an air tour company that transitioned into charter, and that grew over the course of about 15 years. And we turned Sunset into, and when I say we, I mean every person that was part of Sunset at any given time, and that includes pilots that were there for a year, to some of the guys and gals that are on our executive team now that were part of it. So we grew that over about 15 years, and we were approached by a private equity group originally, I think, in about 2005, that was doing a roll-up of regional charter operators. The company was called Jet Direct, and I'm sure there are people that are watching that remember all this. Kay, I know you certainly did. You probably got a few scars from that yourself. What they were trying to do, Vince, was roll up about 11, I think 10 or 11, charter companies from all over the country. And it was a great idea, poorly executed, undercapitalized and with bad culture. And, and it was a collision of, you know, that's a whole nother webinar we can talk about sometime. But ultimately, after, you know, I got the transaction done in 2007, and my intent, and I think this is important to note, my intent around wanting to be part of Jet Direct was not about an exit. It was never, none of this, none of my journey has ever been about financial remuneration for my passion. It has been about airplanes and people all along. And I've often said that that's the most important lesson to take away from any of us, is really that it's not going to be about money. When you reach a point where you can turn around and say, okay, I think I've kind of gotten where I wanted to be, it's typically about something other than cash. And that was ultimately for us, or for me, what drove me to Jet Direct was I just wanted to be a part of something bigger. And I'd built over 15 years what I thought was sort of gotten to the apex of where we were. And so we closed the transaction in 2007. And in, sort of mid-2008, the chairman of the company came out and visited and basically said they were going to bankrupt the company. And it had been a painful 18 months. They still owed us some money from the sale. And we said, okay, well, we get it. And he said, but I'm going to give you your business back, basically, functionally. We worked for about 6 months or 4 months to get that done. Ultimately couldn't for a variety of reasons, including, secured creditor approval and all sorts of legal mumbo jumbo that had taken place. And so we ultimately said, look, we're going off on our own. We're going to start over again. And we launched Solaris on March 1st of 2009 as a fresh brand new company. A lot of people think that that transaction actually happened and that we got sunset back, and it's actually not the case. We launched as a LLC versus a corporation. And it was really, philosophically, it was a lifeboat for people that had been at Jet Direct. My founding business partner was a guy by the name of Jake Cartwright. Vince, I know you know Jake.
I do know.
Jake had been the CEO at Tag and was the sort of the linchpin team member to bring over a lot of the really talented, experienced professionals at Tag. And with them came a lot of the clients. And it was the classic case of if you build it, they will come, turning into sort of the phoenix rising out of the ashes. And that was 12, 13 years ago. And we sit now at about 250 airplanes under management and, 1,400 employees.
Yeah, that's just an amazing, amazing story. I have one question for you, then I want to slide over to Kay for a couple of things. Solaris, how'd you come up with that name?
So the SOL is Latin for sun, and that was sort of, homage to Sunset Aviation, which was my first company. Air is the business we're in, airplanes. And us is that which fuels it, which is the people.
Wow.
Yeah.
Really?
And
that's pretty cool.
I still have, we messed around with different spellings and names and logos and whatnot. And, that stuff evolves, as Kay knows, over the years. You change your logo here and there. And but I still have the napkin that we drew out the first original Solaris spelling and logo on. And
Well, that's kind of neat, though, because it's a name with really specific meaning in reference to all
the
things.
And one of the most misspelled company names in the industry, I'm sure.
Yeah. Wow. We have about 15 minutes left, so I wanted to make sure I get a couple other things in from both of you guys. But Kay, I wanted to come back to you. When Dan was talking about the value of the employees, you and I kind of had that conversation the other day too about the importance of and the value of having good employees with good intentions that help you build a business like your business has been able to. I happen to know one of your employees really well and know that she's been a loyal employee to you for a number of years, and you reward that and you welcome that.
Yes, no, it's all about creating a culture, and Dan was touching on it earlier, and if you build that culture and that culture of service excellence and creating an environment for your team to come in to work hard and play hard and have opportunities to grow. And to this day, this year we're opening 13 new locations. The reason I'm opening those locations, honestly, is for my team to grow within the company. So they can become, I have car washers that become regional managers. I have pilots that have joined us now that are area directors. So are my goal is to provide locations and opportunities for our team so it can grow within the aviation industry. And having the right people is very important, because for us, you know, aviation hospitality is very important. And I think we are the only company in the world that we meet and greet the front of the plane and the back of the plane when they upon arrival and upon departure. So we are the only company that we are TSA approved. We can go on the ramp, and we are badge all of my staff. They go through flight safety training, and we make sure that they understand the safety on the ramp. We drive on the ramp. So when the guest arrives on behalf of Solaris and our other partners and the FPO, we welcome them to the city, to the FPO. We have to create that first memorable impression. And also we have to make sure that when they depart, we create that farewell impression so they will remember that and come back. One thing that we always talk about in our business, in Dan's business, people come, spend a lot of money with us. They fly or they rent a car for the vacation business. But then when they leave with a receipt. But when you go to a mall, you spend that money, the $2,000, $3,000, $4,000, $5,000, $10,000, you can go to a designer store, go to jewelry store, buy something tangible. But for us, they pay for the service. And we have to make sure that service is so memorable that they will come back again to Solaris and go rental. So we have to make sure that receipt that we hand to our guests is filled with memory, because our people fly privately for the safety, for the convenience, for the luxury of it. So we have to make sure we combine all that and make sure it's a memorable experience. So having the right team member that understand and believing in the culture and understand and learn aviation is very important, because they have to speak the language of our guests.
So this is kind of old school from the customer service standpoint, because some of the most successful companies also have some of the greatest customer service on the planet. And it's interesting for me to hear that from both of you in your different aspects of the industry, but that's a main emphasis. I wanted to ask you, and I'm going back a little bit on this, Kay, where do you think you get that from? Because you have been customer service oriented for a long time. Sounds like going back to almost your childhood. So did that come from your dad, or, you know, where does that originate?
It has, you have to have that servant heart. You have to have that servant mentality, because service is not about me, it's about the receiver. So I have to make sure that I create an environment for myself and for my guests that I can go above and beyond to make an impression on them. And it started from childhood. It started from my mom when we had guests coming to our home, how she took care of our guests, you know, from the moment they arrived, from different, you know, the different things that she will offer and make them comfortable at home. So I learned that, and I try to expand on it and bring it into our business and make sure that we are a hospitable company. So when the guest comes, we always, at our training, that we do a 5-day training, customer service and aviation training for our team, our guests that they come to our FPOs, you know, it's all about them. We have to look at it that they are the celebrity coming to a gala, and that gala is about them. So as soon as they arrive, come down the stairs, it's all about our guests. It's all about how to make an impression, how to make sure that they have a memorable experience.
Yeah. And Dan, you're a stickler for customer service. I know this for a fact.
Yeah, for sure.
It's very important to you and your business in terms of managing the aircraft for a variety of owners, et cetera. Tell us a little bit about that.
I am a big believer, Vince, that you have to arm your team with tools, resources, and in some cases, the scaffolding around their Achilles heels or you know, blind spots, and arm them with those things, whether it's other team members or whatever it is. But then, you know, I think the one differentiator is that great organizations take the next step, which is probably the toughest, which is backwards, away from the situation, to let people do their jobs. And I think it is core and fundamental to the way we think about the aviation business, certainly the management business at Solaris, in that, you know, we believe that armed with the right tools and resources, that people will 9.999 times out of 10 exceed your expectations, not fail to meet them. And I going back to what Kay was saying, sort of the servant heart, I know that for me, it's always been a desire to please, whether it's through, you know, a trip situation or resolving a problem. This is a business of spinning plates, and Kay knows that better than anybody. They're going to hit the ground. And I have always believed that it takes three different people to be involved with a broken plate. Somebody's got to clean up the mess. Somebody's got to grab another plate and keep on spinning. And then, especially in the aviation world, which is sort of operational, somebody's got to do the post-mortem on the broken plate and figure out how we don't drop a plate again. And, you know, you have to have people that A, know what they're doing, B, have the resources at hand to, whether they are the cleaner, the new spinner, or the post-mortem, you know, plate research person. You got to have people involved to do that. This is, you know, the aircraft management and the charter world are more people business, frankly, than psychotherapy. It really is. And it is truly, and I think, you know, from an entrepreneur's perspective, you have to understand that this whole notion of some of the people all the time or all the people some of the time, it is really true. And sometimes you as the CEO or the entrepreneur end up on the short end of that stick. You know, sometimes you're going to be some of the people and sometimes you're going to be all the people. But everything is a building block in this process, in my opinion.
Yeah, you and Kay have both been in the industry for a long time. So you guys have seen a lot, experienced a lot. I want to spend a few minutes before we start to wrap things up and hear from both of you what you're over. And we've touched on different things, but I just would like to be a little bit more direct with it. I'll start with you, Kay. What's your overall view of the private aviation industry, business aviation industry, as you see it now and going forward?
So we went through hardship in September 2001 happened, September 11, 2001 happened. And we went through the cycle, financial crisis 2007, 2008, and then we went through the COVID last year. And we saw during all these three areas that we experienced in aviation, GA was the first industry to come back. And so it's the market that is growing. And I know with talking to all of our partners across the country, last year has been a major growth for all the FBOs, charter company flight departments. The sales of aircraft is up, charter is up, our business is up. So there is a demand and it's growing. You know, we are seeing at our FBOs that people who have never flown commercial. About a month ago, I was in our location in Tampa. This family drove in. And I was walking out of the FBO and the dad asked me, where is the TSA? I said, that is in the commercial airport. You're in the wrong place. And no, we fly in a private jet. I said, then you don't need a TSA. And they were shocked. I said, what time is your flight? And they got there 2 hours before. They thought it was a commercial airport. And they might go through TSA. So now, after flying private, they're never going to go back to commercial. They experienced that. And we are seeing a lot of new faces in our business that they have never been renting from us because there are over 500,000 people who fly privately in our database. They use us on a regular basis. And now we've seen new names that have never flown privately. Now they're chartering or they're getting to the fractional or buying aircraft and they're flying. So GA, business aviation, is growing. We have seen it in the past year. And you know, sky's the limit.
Yeah. Dan, couldn't say it better. Couldn't said it better at all. Dan?
Yeah, no, and obviously in the go rental world, they see it, you know, frontline. I'm probably, without sounding sort of Chicken Little, I'm a little bit more concerned. On the positive side, I think it's great to see the amount of influx into the general aviation and private aviation worlds. You know, frankly, thanks in no small part to some of the fractional companies. You know, Kenny Dichter, who's a good friend, has done a great job of really sort of exposing the general populace to flying privately in a great way, and now a public company. So these are all positive things that have happened. We are seeing the lowest percentage of used aircraft available on the resale market, I think historically, probably by now. You know, we are seeing basically every viable candidate has a full-time job that wants to be working. I flip a little bit more over to the concern side, which is that I think the entire industry is overpressurized right now. And it's a term I'm using because I'm seeing it every day. I literally, while we've been sitting here talking, I am watching an email thread go down about an FBO issue. Every ancillary support infrastructure company and vendor that we're dealing with right now is feeling this. It's too many flights. Airplanes are flying more hours than they've ever flown. Pilots are working more days than they've ever, pilots and flight attendants and maintenance supervisors, everybody's working harder and stretched thinner than they've ever been. And this isn't just relative to what last year was like. This is when we go back and look historically. So I think that, you know, if we truly believe that recognizing something going on as a trend is the first step to breaking the chain of events that leads to incident, I think we have to recognize what's going on in the industry right now. And it drives that much more focus on what we're doing to bring some of the folks that are watching this video up into the industry as part of the solution. Because if we're holding back people and pushing back on, again, resources, tools, and scaffolding, then we're not doing ourselves any good. We've had two business aviation fatalities in 60 days, and that's a lot. It's two too many. And we accept that, you know, accidents happen and we've got to do everything we can to prevent them. But I worry that overpressurized state of the industry can push us as an industry and as a general populace to an edge. And so it's a conversation we're having right now. Again, overall, I couldn't be more thrilled that business aviation is finally getting its day in the sun. And Kay, you remember back when we both started our businesses, you know, it was only for celebrities and rock stars and the uber rich. And it's just not anymore. I mean, you see it on social media everywhere. I mean, we've got certain companies that are advertising on news channels and whatnot. It's really cool to see that something that has been a passion for both of us, Kay, has become kind of mainstream in an odd way. But at the same time, there's a lot that's going on underneath the blanket, so to speak, that people need to be aware of and focused on and part of the solution in preventing tragedy, frankly.
Yeah, Dan, thanks for sharing that side of it too. It's always good to hear both sides of even a positive picture. And I think that's a very realistic perspective that you've given us on this. We are out of time, but I wanted to give each of you a chance to give any parting words of advice with regard to the aspiring young aviation professionals and you know, just some parting words of what you would like to share with them as we wrap things up. Kay, I'll start with you.
No, we talked about it, being passionate is very important. You know, don't take no for an answer. Educate yourself, learn, and be able to change with the market. It's very important. But dream big, go after your dream, and you will make it.
Yeah,
simply put. A great point. Go ahead, Dan.
Yeah, and I would just add to that, stick with what you know and love and worry about figuring out how to make money doing it later. You will survive through your passion, in my opinion.
Well, and the money will
you
come.
Go through the steps too. Yeah.
Yep, that's right.
The money always, will come. Yeah. So I that's a really great point. And I think. Go ahead, Kay.
I've two friends. They both wanted to start a restaurant. One went in and started washing dishes, cooking, working in the restaurant. And right now, he's two of the most amazing restaurants, successful restaurants in Newport Beach, California. The other friend wanted to be the owner without working in the restaurant. And within 3 years, he had to shut down his business and he lost a lot of money. So my advice is, you know, don't try to go in for that top position. Go inside, learn it, work it, and get the experience and move up. And the position and the money will come after you learn the business. And there's the two books I tell people to read. One is the 10,000 hours. That it shows that you have to work 10,000 hours before you can say you know something. And the other one, From Good to Great. So those are two good books that I give my staff to read. So hopefully our young generation will read those and be passionate about what they do. We, our industry needs you. So looking forward to, you know, Dan and I will do anything for you guys. If anything, we can assist you. We are here for you guys.
Well, gosh, you guys said it all perfectly. I wanted to piggyback. I will a little bit, but you've said it. You both expressed it perfectly. I was just going to say that this also applies not only to being an entrepreneur, but just in general to your profession. So whether you are being a pilot or mechanic or some other aspect in the air traffic controller, whatever aspect of the industry that you're interested in, applying those principles that you both just talked about really makes all the difference in the world. So on the work side of it, it's not just about the salary. Yes, it's nice to make a good salary and you eventually want to grow to a point where you're comfortable with what you're taking home salary-wise. But if you're not really enjoying it and you're really not getting enough out of it, then, you know, at some point you're even going to say, what's the point? So I just appreciate both of you guys and what you've shared. I really appreciate both of your candor about your backgrounds again and about what you've been through, the challenges you face, the positive and the negative to get where you are. So I want to thank both of you sincerely for being on the show today. Wish you both the best with your businesses. Kay Gittabin with Go Rentals, Dan Drohan with Solaris, which I just love now that I know where the name came from. I think that's just pretty darn cool. And, you know, yeah. Kay, I'm not slighting you because Go Rentals is straight to the point. I appreciate both of you being on the show and want to thank you both.
Thanks for having me, Vince.
And we want to thank you, too, for always inspiring the young generation. Thank you, Vince. You're doing an amazing job. And we are very proud of knowing you and being your friend. So thank you for all you do for a young generation.
I appreciate that. I think we are in a position now where we're having another cycle of greatness in aviation and aerospace with the new technology and the urban air mobility and all the other things that are coming about and things like the Autoland system and a small plane and just all of that. I think is fantastic. And it's the younger generation. It's the next group that's coming up. They're the ones with all the genius and the ability to take this stuff forward. So whatever this show and anybody out there, as you mentioned earlier, Dan, whatever anyone can do to mentor the next generation, it's definitely needed and welcome.
These are the right conversations at the right time, no doubt.
Absolutely. Gentlemen, take care. Best of luck. Maybe I'll see you at NBAA base in Las Vegas. And thank you, everybody, for watching All Things Aviation and Aerospace. Please remember to subscribe. I always forget to say that. And I want to thank you all for watching and supporting this show. Everybody take care and have a good one.